Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Broadcasting from the Ante Up Studio, it's the longest running poker podcast for the everyday poker player with your host, Joe Scales.
Hello, A-Team. Today is Friday, March 24th, and today I am not in Vegas. The original plan was for me to be sitting around a poker table somewhere out there by the time you were listening to this. But some things have come up and I wasn't able to make the trip. So that trip will have to happen later in the year. In the meantime, I'll continue to get ready for my trips to Schenectady and Chicago next month. On today's episode, we have a special guest that's a mindset coach. We're going to talk about ways to stay focused mentally on the game and in life as a whole. Also, don't forget to grab your merch from the shop on the website, and if you haven't already, like and follow us on the socials. One last thing, if you like what you're listening to, be sure to give us a rating and or review wherever you're listening. That's all I have. Let's get on with the show.
Find out what conversations are happening around the poker table with Table Talk.
All right, here we are, back around the poker table. We've got Mike here again this week. How you doing, Mike?
Here's Mikey. Oh, I'm doing pretty well, Jeff. What's up, my friend?
Man, I am doing well. It's been busy. You know, we've got podcasts every week, trying to get this magazine done, trying to get it out.
And the phone calls are coming in.
Yep. So it's been hectic, but I'm loving it.
Yeah, I'm getting some calls, or I'm getting some folks hollering at me on the fundraising stuff where I'm working on that end of it too, just to let you know. So that I honestly think we're going to have a busy summer.
Yeah.
Spring for me to get by with the fundraising things and the events that I'm looking at going to. And I'm glad you're going in April on the 20th up to Chicago. I'll probably, if I'm able, I'm going to go down to see Elliot in New York for that week. And I know you're going to be doing a lot of that. So that's one of the things I wanted to ask. Let me just kind of start this a little, can I?
Yeah.
Because there's something I'm not too sure about. Okay, I've got a couple of people that I would like to stake, but I don't know exactly how that works. So can you explain that to me?
So there's a couple of ways of doing it. Sometimes it's just between you and the player, right? So you say, I'm gonna buy 5% or 10% or whatever percentage of a player. And then whatever that percentage is that you take, that's what you can win. So you can win 10% or 5% or whatever, you know, whatever you agree on. So
you pay 10% of the buy-in.
Right.
For them. And then if they win, you get 10% of what they win.
Right.
Wow.
So, and you know, I can have what they call markup, right? So if I think that I am just so good that I have markup, then you buy, let's say I have a 1% markup, then you're paying 11% to get 10%. For example, if the buy-in is $1,000, you would pay $110 to get 10% of the winnings because I've got a markup on it.
Wow.
Because I think I'm just worth that or something. I never understood that. I don't think anybody should have markup. If I'm paying 10%, I get 10%.
I think if somebody paid 10% of me, and I probably own 20% by the end of the night.
there's another way of doing it too. They have these staking sites where you can actually go on, and I could, like, if I wanted to have somebody stake me, then I can go on to this site and say, you know, whatever the amount is, I'm selling X amount of myself. So I'm selling 30% of myself for this tournament.
Okay.
And then people can buy whatever percentage of that until 30% is gone, and then it's done. But that site helps keep it from somebody just taking your money, right? That it helps legitimize it a little bit.
Gotcha.
If you're talking about, you know, staking somebody like maybe me, if you wanted to stake me, I wouldn't complain about that. You know, I am going up to Schenectady and all, and you could definitely buy a piece of me for the main event there.
Oh, and really?
We know each other. You can. I'm not gonna.
You know, you're not gonna make me pay 10% for 9%.
Exactly.
Will you take 5%?
Could you stake me for 5%?
Yeah.
Is that what you? Yeah. Yeah. You can stake me for 5%. That could be fun.
How do you win though? If you get people that stake you up to the whole total buy-in?
Well, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that. So I would only make maybe, I don't know, 60% of myself available.
Oh, okay. So if you won, you'd get 40% of it.
Exactly. And then
you would get the rest.
Right.
Wonder how that would work out with taxes. They have to claim their own, or how would that work? Or is that,
you know, I don't know how that works. That might be a question for Zach Zimbili, the tax expert. Maybe I will reach out to Zach.
Well, were you serious just now? That you would take up to 60% of your of this for this that tournament in New York?
Yeah, I would do that. I'd do that. That'd be kind of fun. Actually, that'd be kind of fun. And you know, I'm not doing this because I think that I'm the best in the world or anything like that. But it might be kind of fun for the A team to be able to get involved if they wanted to buy some of that. I'll put it out there to everybody. If anybody wants to buy a percentage of me for the main event in Schenectady, then I'll sell up to 60% of myself. So anybody that wants to take.
But I like to buy 10 right now. Just put me down.
Okay.
Yeah, put me down for 10%. Because I look at it this way. It to me, it's a no-brainer. I've got a second seat in the main event with you now. If you win it all, I get 10% of that if I don't win it.
That's correct. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't, I don't even have to win at all. If I win any amount of money, you're going to get 10% of it.
No, I like that. Okay.
So
send something up. Yeah. That put it on the book. I think that would be wonderful. I mean, I'm sure there's other folks out there who would love to buy into part of that. I know we got people out there that love that.
I don't know that that's true, but I'll put it out there to the A team. If you want a piece of me, then there's 50% left.
Yeah, there's 50 left because I just got 10 of it. all right. Well, that's awesome. And I'll work it with you and try to figure out.
Sure.
I want to bring up one other thing. I know we got a special guest here at Table Talk in a little bit. I'm gonna leave and let you have them. But I want to bring up one thing I just need to know. And maybe we could make this a poll question. Okay. Food at the tables. I'm talking about home games or anywhere.
Yeah.
I am so tired of saying, yep, that's the ace of spades right there because the mustard's on it.
Right.
I've seen this at casinos.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I pick it up and there's a little piece of chocolate on the corner of my card. What?
Right.
What do y'all think? Should food be allowed at the tables or not? Yes or no?
Yeah, so it's just a yes or no question. I'm gonna go ahead and put my vote in there as no. I get it, I really do. I've sat at the table and been hungry too, but I don't like it because nearly everything will make a mess. You know, if I'm eating a sandwich, I'm getting crumbs on the table. If I'm eating crackers, crumbs. So
I don't know.
Just don't eat at the tables. I will say I will pull out a granola bar, like a Clif bar or something like that. If I'm feeling like I need something to get me by, then I will pull out a Clif bar or something like that. Here's a funny story. On the way to the last time that I went to Vegas, I took just loads of those Cliff Bars because I was playing in a big tournament and I was going to be playing for a while. And I knew I was going to have at least two per day. So I just bought, two big things of them at Sam's and dumped the boxes into my bag.
All right. So hold on. You're going to play in Vegas. Well, yeah. You got to know your percentages and you got to know a little bit about, okay, am I going to draw on this or am I going to fold what? And you're using those math skills all the time, my friend.
Right.
Right. What percentage of the pot? What am I getting out of this? What are my odds? What is this? What's my chances? So you're going to eat at least two a day and you're going to be down there for how long? A week?
Yeah.
That's 7 days. Two times seven is how many?
It's just 14.
Dude, come play poker with me.
I was eating them all the time too. So there were numerous times when I didn't eat anything but Cliff Bars. So for the first 5 days of the trip, I think, maybe it was 4 days of the trip, I didn't eat dinner. I didn't eat breakfast. I just ate Cliff Bars. That was it.
Let me tell you, why didn't you do, oh my gosh, we're going to tell on somebody now. We're not going to use anybody's name, but we both know a man that's played poker with us and gone, stayed overnight with us.
Yep.
That makes his own grilled cheese sandwiches on the iron in the hotel rooms.
Yeah, that's true.
He learned how to use the iron and makes his own grilled cheese sandwiches. I'm like, okay, I ain't going to room with him no more.
I woke up one time and he was making fried eggs he had brought.
Yeah.
Like just literally just some round.
Just plate of metal.
Yeah. And it had the iron underneath it warming up. And he was making eggs.
Fried eggs. Oh, good God. You got to love him. All right, folks. Don't try this at home.
Right.
All right. Hey, listen, it's been fun, Joe. I'm going to get off of here so that you got some time to spend with, you said it was Javon?
Javon Wooden, yeah.
Awesome. Get Javon on there to talk to us.
All right. Like Mike mentioned, we've got a little bonus content to Table Talk this week as I'm joined by Javon Wooden, and we're going to delve a little deeper into the mental side of poker. Hey, Javon, how you doing?
I am doing well, Joe. Thanks for having me, man.
I'm glad you're here. Javon is CEO of a mindset and business coaching firm called Live Not Loathe, where they help people with mindset and business coaching. Javon, you feeling good? Are you ready to jump into this? Talk a little bit about your mindset at the poker table.
Oh, you know what? I'm feeling good now, but it wasn't always that way, right? We always have our ups and downs. Sure. That's just life, right? There's always a balance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, to kind of jump in this a little bit, a lot of times poker players can get stuck in a mindset, right? We can struggle to get out of that particular mindset and think of things from a different standpoint. What would you say are some ways that you can get out of that rut?
Absolutely. So there are a lot of similarities or analogies that people use when it comes to life and poker.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
And when you talk about being down, right, when the chips are down in poker, you know, sometimes you get in that scarcity mindset. Maybe you don't make the move that you normally would make because you don't feel as confident in your play, right? Maybe what normally works for you isn't working, right?
Right.
So there's a lot of similarities there that happen in life. So I always recommend a few things when it comes to life in general and mindset. So one, you got to look at how you're speaking to yourself, right? If you're at the poker table and you're downing, you're calling yourself stupid, saying yourself you suck and all these other things because things aren't going your way, typically you confirm that with your play. You confirm that with the way you act out. You confirm that with the way you handle the adversity. So you have to really talk to yourself, switch it, say, okay, what am I doing wrong? Am I telegraphing my play, right?
Yeah.
Am I telegraphing what I do in life? Am I downing myself? The second thing you want to look at is your mannerisms, right? Your posture. How are you carrying yourself? Are you slumped over? Are you looking like you're defeated? Are you showing that, you know, things have gotten you down? Or are your shoulders back, your posture's up, your head up, your core's tight, right? Are you looking like you're confident, composed, like you know what you're doing? that also comes into play when you're speaking to people, when you're playing poker, or in life in general. When your posture is correct and erect, you feel more confident about what you're doing, what you're saying, the action steps you're taking, and so do those around you. The third thing you want to think about when you are sitting at a table or in life, when you're talking about mindset, is what are you holding on to, right? Are you holding on to that past play that you just did?
Right.
You know, are you holding on to, you know, someone who told you something in the past? Maybe you still hear that voice in your head and it's not letting you move forward. So you have to think about that. What am I holding on to? Really pay attention to your thoughts, pay attention to your actions, and see if it's you or if it's someone or something else that you're letting control what's happening with you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Especially, you know, you're talking about that. What's the phrase that they always say, you know, look good, feel good. It's kind of the same at the poker table. Look good, feel good, play good. So I like that, you know, when you look confident and you feel confident, then even if the cards aren't going your way at that moment, don't show that you're frustrated. Another thing with poker, as in life, there's always risks that we take, right? If you're playing it safe in poker and you're only playing the premium cards, you're not going to do great. You may not lose very much, but you're also not going to win much. So same in life. What's your mindset when it comes to risk?
Man, calculated risk is necessary, right? Yeah. I believe that if you've prepared, if you've done the work, you have to trust that. Right? You have to trust that you're making the right moves. You have to actually challenge yourself and step out of your comfort zone to grow, like in poker, right? Your hand may not be good, but if you bluff correctly, you know, you might win that hand, right?
Right.
Sometimes you have to go all in. You might feel like you're shaking in your boots, but maybe that's the proper play, right? So you just have to think about risk in a way to understand that you won't grow if you play it safe. You're going to stay in the comfort zone, and that's a risk in itself. Right.
Right.
Why are you doing that? If you're not playing life full out, if you're not playing at the table full out, you might as well not even be there.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Not taking risk for the sake of taking a risk, but calculated, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Calculated. It has to be calculated. You have to have some type of research backing it. You have to have some type of experience backing it or something. You know, do your homework. Don't just go out there and throw everything in the wind, right? Make sure you're doing it for a reason. Make sure it aligns with your values. Make sure it aligns with your experience and expertise. And it lends to the life that you want.
Right. Well, one of the things that we've talked about a lot lately, it's been on the podcast a lot, and it's been on Facebook and stuff a lot too. When things aren't going well, right, then it's hard to stay positive, but everything's not always going to go the right way. So what advice do you have to stay positive or to get past those moments?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. Life happens, right? Life be life, and as we like to say. And when that happens, you know, you really have to process first. Like, don't just stuff it down or come with that fake positivity, toxic positivity. Address it, right? Why are you feeling that way? What happened? You know, ask yourself, does the emotion or the feel align with what's going on? Because sometimes, you know, we make mountains out of molehills, and we just have to make sure that that's not what we're doing. Take a breath, right? Write about it. Talk about it. Express yourself on how you're feeling. You know, it's when we hold it in that we really, really get into trouble. I mean, you just feel like there's no one that will understand. Chances are there is someone. Right? You have to find that. You got to make sure you have what we call the 360 support system. People that you can confide in, you know, people that you can talk to, people who are going to hold you accountable, people who are going to help you elevate, whether that's in life or at the poker table.
Right.
You have your mentors, you have your group, your subset. You know, you got to have that. That's just a necessity. The other thing that we want to talk about is not looking at it as permanent. When we look at situations or circumstances as permanent, it means it takes away the ability to see options. Because we're like, this just is what it is. This is how it's happening. My luck is down. I'm not doing well, right? All that stuff. Right. That's permanent thinking. So we have to look at it as temporary so that we can see opportunities. There's a quote, I can't remember who says it, but they say nothing is inherently good or bad. So sometimes we have to look at how we are perceiving things and how we are handling the circumstance. If we are down and we're like, woe is me, I'm not going to get out of this, I'm just under this forever, then that's what's going to happen. Like I said, this confirmation bias. You are going to start acting in a way that won't allow you to come from under it, and it's just going to get worse. And that's what you're going to pay attention to. So focus thinking. Focus on looking in an abundant in a growth space. What can I learn from this? And once you learn, what can I apply to the next steps so that I can move forward and get out of this situation? Who can I confide in this situation, right? What resources do I need to help me advance myself, right? Whether it's at the poker table or in life.
Yeah, I mean, we all have people that we will talk to about different things in different areas, right? So I've got mentors that I will go over hands with that happened at the poker table. I have people that I talk about from a business standpoint, you know, what can we do different and things. And then I have people in personal life that I talk to that help in those realms. So I like that. Absolutely. The phrase that you use, 360, because everything is 360. So all things working together, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I love that.
Thank you.
Since we first connected, you know, I've kind of followed some of your social media and things like that as well. And one of the things that I heard you talk about is that you want people to believe they can manifest whatever dreams have come to their mind. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yes. So dreams, right? Typically what we dream, we just don't think it's impossible. We're like, hey, that's just a dream. But if we think about everything that has come to fruition, right, in life, somebody dreamed that. The equipment we're using to record this podcast episode, someone dreamed that we can use video or we can transpose our voice over airwaves, all that stuff. And it, someone also said that it was impossible. So we have to look at our dreams to say, hey, if I really want that, what will it take for me to get it?
Sure. Right? Yeah.
Again, with the resources, we got to look at and believe that we are capable of making that a reality, whether it's, you know, that dream vacation or retiring early, starting a multi-million dollar business, creating an invention, whatever it is. You gotta, if you really, really believe in your heart of hearts and you want this to take place, you gotta do what it takes to get it. It's not gonna be easy, right? It's not, right. But if it's worth it to you, you have to at least give it a shot, right? The richest place is the graveyard for a reason. Because there are so many dreams and so many hopes, so many great ideas that just never came to fruition because they never attempted it. They never gave it a shot. And that's what I don't want the listeners to do.
Yeah.
Right. I want them to go for that dream, go and manifest it.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Tell the listeners, one, how they can get a hold of you, you know, how to follow you on social media and all that. But tell them a little bit more about Live Not Loathe as well.
Absolutely. I'll start with telling them a little bit about Live Not Loathe.
Yeah,
so Live Not Loathe. I said that earlier, you know, it wasn't always this way where I had this mindset and I'm able to talk about these things because I had that scarcity mindset where I just was in poverty when I was younger. You know, I grew up in Rochester, New York. It's not the best of areas. And I just didn't believe, right? I was that person that didn't believe that I could manifest a dream.
Sure.
Fast forward, right? I am here now. I created Live Not Loathe because it represents the transformation from loathing life, hating your circumstances, hating yourself, hating the job, right? To realizing that you have control over your destiny if you control your mindset, right? So we can be product of our effort versus products of our environment or circumstances. So that's what Live Not Loathe exists to do. And we help with life coaching, we help with business development, technology, marketing, all you name it. Right. Okay. We are a total one-stop shop for growth. And you can catch me at my website, livenotloathe.com. That's LiveNotLoathe. And you can book your free consultation there. Or you can follow me on all social platforms at livenotloathe.
Okay, great. Like you said, poker and life, you know, there's so many similarities there. And I honestly believe it's so important to be in the right mindset when you approach life and when you approach a big tournament or approach a big session in poker. So I think that mindset coaching is so important. And it's something that a lot of poker players and a lot of people in general don't think about. You know, they ignore that part. And having the right mindset is so important to success. So what you're doing is so important. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. And if you don't mind, I'll leave the audience with one more word.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I just want people to get yourself in a space where you can perform at your best. I recommend everyone have a ritual, right? Routine. That way, you know, every time you do that, when you create that habit, it puts you in that space. So you're able to block out whatever is taking place in life so you can go ahead and get focused at the task at hand. So whatever that routine is, whether you have to say a mantra or an affirmation, whether you do a certain dance, whatever it is, make sure you create a routine. So for instance, like Seth Godin, he goes on stage, before he goes on, he'll say, "I am here to serve." So he remembers that it is a privilege to be up there, and he remembers why he's there so he can give the energy that he needs.
Well, yeah, I think that's a way that honestly I need to start doing that, you know, before each day and before each tournament, maybe even a little bit different mantra. I like that. I like that a lot. Absolutely. Well, Javon, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to the listeners here, and you have a great rest of your day, okay?
Thanks for having me, Joe. I appreciate it. You do the same.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Now it's time for Call the Floor with Elliot Schechter.
Elliot Schechter is the poker room manager for Rivers Casino in Schenectady, New York. He joined us each week to say how he would roll on situations that come up in your games, and he is with me again this week. Hey, Elliot, how you doing this week?
Much better now that I'm dug out from the 12 inches of snow we got from our nor'easter a few days ago.
Did you have that much, really?
Yes.
I mean, I knew you had a lot coming. I didn't realize it was that much.
It was quite a bit, and it was rapid. Snowflakes were coming down that were easily 2 or 3 inches big.
Oh, my gosh. No, you can keep it. Well, hey, before we get started on the Call the Floor, I want you to mention one more time for us I know you've got special room rates for the Electric City Tournament Series that you've got coming up, and is there Absolutely. Anything else you want us to know about?
The Electric City Poker Series, April 13th to the 23rd. 11 events, something for everybody, being a great time. Special room rates are available with the code 4ACE23, 4ACE23. We'll get you $88 room nights here at the Rivers Casino and Resort in Schenectady.
Nice. I'm planning on coming out for some of those, so I know it's going to be a good time. So if you can, make it out there. I'd love to play against some of the A-team out there, too.
It'll be a good time. This is a really good tournament region, and we should have excellent fields.
Absolutely. All right, well, this week's Call the Floor was actually posted on the Annie Up Fans Facebook page by Mark Cantor, and he says, "We are in a league tournament with 20 players who can earn money and points toward a WSOP tournament entry during a 10-month season. The group is well known amongst all players, and we are pretty casual, but try to run each event closely to how WSOP events are run. We're down to final four after the money bubble has burst. The button, with the largest stack by far, and using it aggressively, doesn't notice that the small blind has been posted, big blind with the big blind ante has been put in, plus the player to the dealer's right also puts out the big blind plus big blind ante right in front of his stack, but not in the middle of the playing table, thinking he is on the big blind. Cards are dealt, and there's a little banter before the button looks right, sees chips placed in front of the first to act player, considers options, and chooses to fold. Small blind also folds, and then big blind notices that under the gun has chips out but hasn't looked at his cards yet and inquires about it. Under the gun now wakes up and looks at cards saying, "Oh, I fold. I don't want to be in." Tournament director says that action has occurred as a result of the perceived call from under the gun, so the calling chips cannot go back to under the gun. Although the extra big blind ante that never made it across the mythical betting line is allowed to go back and is ruled a call, meaning big blind and under the gun go to the flop with 3.5 big blinds in the bet. After the flop, the big blind checks, under the gun shoves, and big blind folds, making exactly nobody happy. Other than the small blind, who was folding no matter what, the big blind feels cheated that he didn't get the walk. Under the gun didn't really want to be in the hand and feels offended that he was forced to play the hand and commit chips. The dealer slash big stack insists that if he didn't think there had been a call, he would have raised and likely taken the pot because neither short stack in the blinds had a decent hand. So what should have happened? Who should have put in how many chips and when?
Well, Mark, this is a good one, and I appreciate you asking about it. If you've ever seen the Reddit forum, which is pretty popular and almost a counterpart to Call the Floor, it's called Am I the Jerk, but actually a much more profane name. And people write in with their situations and they ask, well, was I the jerk or was somebody else the jerk? And what would you have done? Well, so very similar to Call the Floor. One of the famous answers is ESH, which stands for Everybody Sucks Here.
I like it.
This comes down to the very basic requirement of poker players to pay attention. Pay attention. Look what's happening. If something seems wrong, speak up immediately. Don't just sit there passively and assume and then after the fact get angry or want something to change. It's too late. So you had four players, none of whom decided to pay attention, which is rather impressive. It's okay to speak up. It's okay not to assume. It's okay to ask. I mean, I can't tell from the description whether this was a dealer dealt or a player dealt event, but that doesn't absolve anybody of anything, and the ruling would have been the same. The outcome was correct. Action was offered and accepted. Whether that was the intention is immaterial, as whoever made that decision stated. The person who put the chips out accidentally was accepting the fact that they were the big blind.
Right.
The next player to act was accepting the fact that they were the big blind and folded. Well, the action was offered, the action was accepted, the hand plays, and life moves on.
Right. I think after reading this, though, my question, why was the ante returned instead of that being considered a raise?
From what I can read into this, it's apparent that the chips were not side by side, but rather separated.
Oh, yeah.
So that whoever is supposed to put the pot together would collect the ante and not take the big blind. So they were probably in relation to the player, one behind the other, with at least a little bit of space between them. So the chips behind were not considered in play, which is not incorrect.
Got it.
You can't assume chips like that are all in play, especially if it's not that person's turn for the big blind. So I can understand where that comes from. And that's very common for people to post their blinds that way. They're not posting one pile of chips. They're posting two piles of chips, one behind the other, so that the dealer can correctly assemble the pot prior to dealing the cards. So, yeah, I can understand the ante not being in play in that spot because, well, the extra chips not being in play simply because it was behind and closer to the player relative to the chips in front or closest to the center of the table.
Got it. Okay, I mean, that makes sense, yeah. Well, I'm glad that they got it right. You're definitely not going to make everybody happy all the time, and at least everybody got to be equally unhappy.
And misery loves company. Yeah. And diplomats will always tell you that when they come up with the best solution to a diplomatic problem, generally almost everybody is unhappy and quite angry.
That's fair.
So that happened here too. And again, these people need to redirect their frustration towards themselves. All they had to do was pay attention.
Right.
And speak up.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the number one reason for mistakes happening, to be honest, right?
Certainly is. Yeah. When I'm called to a table to make a decision, over 80% of the time, it's how to untie a knot that was created by somebody not paying attention.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I'm glad we were able to answer the question for you. I would say I'm sorry that everybody is unhappy, but at least it was diplomatic. So there you go.
It was fair for everybody.
That's right. All right, Elliot, I appreciate you being on here again, and we'll talk again next week.
Looking forward to it. I'll see you then.
All right. And if you have a submission that you would like Elliot to go through, send it to podcast@andyupmagazine.com.
Let's break it down with Hand of the Week.
All right, here we are back with another Hand of the Week, back here with Patrick, who got his first win last week.
Better believe it. We've been talking about it for a week too. So got a few new listeners to the podcast on my end. So we're back again for another one. So
good deal. Well, this week the hand is sent in by Merton Bruce. I think I'm saying that right, Merton.
That's what it looks like. Yeah.
And he's playing 1-3. He tells us he's got 850 in his stack. It folds to him in the cutoff. And he looks down at the queen of clubs, queen of hearts. So how do you want to start the hand?
All right. So we've got pocket queens and 850 in the stack. I'm going to start off with a $30 bet.
That's pretty steep. That's 10x. Yep. You're raising 10 it times is. The big blind.
Yep.
You don't want anybody to play.
I don't. You know, well, that's actually a very good point. We'll see how the hand plays out. But yeah.
You're like, I'm going to tie in my pot.
Yeah.
Well, he took about half of that. He opens to 15.
Okay.
And the big blind, who is a very good reg with a deep stack, three bets me to 50.
Wow. All right.
So right off the bat,
he came in even hotter than I did.
So what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do with that?
Well, with my playing my $30 bet, I would call him.
Sure.
And
okay.
Keep going.
Yeah, yeah. So the big blind, I guess the small blind folded. It looks like it just went heads up. Doesn't talk about anybody else in the hand, so it looks like everybody else folds.
Okay, so it's me in the over the top.
Yeah. Come. So you would call.
Yep, I would call.
Merton decided he wanted to put in a four bet, so he takes it up to 150, and the big blind calls. So we've got 300 in the pot already.
All yeah. right.
The flop comes out. The ace of spades, jack of clubs, four of diamonds. The big blind checks to you.
Okay. So we've got pocket queens looking at the board. There's nothing that's going to be, I mean, all different suits. You're good there. We have middle top pair. I mean, if he came in hot with aces, then he's just tripped them up. Or obviously he could have kings, you know, if I'm thinking based on that bet. It's probably aces, kings, or even my queens. So if he checks to me, believe it or not, I'm probably going to check back at this point and see how this goes.
Okay. Well, it looks like Merton decided to check back as well.
Okay. Smart man, Merton.
The turn is the two of hearts.
Which
so
helps nobody.
You have completed the rainbow. Yeah. I mean 3-5 got there, but nobody's playing 3-5 in a 4-bet pot.
Not
so.
A chance that person's left if they were still holding that. So they're still out. So we're pretty much in the same position. So what did he say the big blind did on that one?
The big blind checks again. So do you want to take some action now or do you want to keep checking?
So my thought process is I want to force the hand either. You're going to either do it here or on the river. If he checks to me with that big a pot, I'm probably going to check back and then play the man after this next card that comes out. At least that's how I would play it and see how it goes from there.
Okay. Do you think he could? So obviously on the flop, you know, if he had pocket kings, for instance,
yeah,
he might check because that ace comes out maybe. So then when the two comes out and he checks again, do you still think he could be playing something like pocket kings or and giving you an opportunity there? Or what's your thought process?
Yeah, my thought process is that he still has one of the top pairs. I don't at this point think he has an ace anywhere. So pocket kings, you know, the chance of him having pocket queens is low. You know, with that big a bet, the only other thing that I could see, but I mean, it would be kind of out. I mean, I don't know his character, but like, could you see a guy coming in hot with like a king queen suited? Would that suit that kind of bet? That would be my only other thought process, at least in my own head. I mean, that's a big bet for having a tall suit, but that would be my only other thought process. So I'm still playing him, at least my personal opinion, a king queen suited or even ace king suited or pocket kings at this point. That's what I'm playing him at.
Sure.
Come.
Yeah, I mean, I think you really just have to, and this is one of the hard parts about getting a hand like this, is you don't know what kind of story has been told through the
before.
Rest of the hands.
Sure.
You know, what does this person put you on that he's three betting you?
Yeah.
You know, if he has king queen, is he the type of player that's going to, you know, raise king queen suited or something like that?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody is four betting king queen off there. Maybe, but probably not.
What did Merton end up doing?
So Merton ends up checking again as well.
Okay.
And the river is six of spades.
Six of spades. So we've got six of spades, two of hearts, ace of spades, jack of clubs, four of diamonds on the board.
Right.
And
you're holding.
I've got queens.
Ladies.
I got the ladies. So big blind does what with it?
Big blind now jams.
Gosh, that was all right. Let's hear it.
It would be for our whole stack. Can we call here?
Again, with exactly what you just said and not having a ton, I mean, we're looking at this very blind with one hand.
Right.
You know, and not a lot of information necessarily behind, you know, the thought process on what's been going on beforehand. But for argument's sake, let's just say this is, you know, maybe even the first hand of the night. I don't, because at that point, I still have him at least kings. And if you came in hard with aces and got an ace and then slow played it the rest of the way, I'm still out of the game. So I'm not. I'm pushing my cards in and saying, well done, you know, big blind, and go from there.
Right. You've got to be putting – both of you have to be playing a decent-sized at least pocket pair, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
He three bets, you four bet. He calls, so he didn't come over the top again.
Yeah. I will say this too, Joe. Part of me is a little bit ego-driven on this one. I don't even know the big blind, but part of me wants to call him just to make him show face. But then, then I'm either buying back in or I'm going home. So right. I don't know if I can do that just yet.
Merton says, I fold, but my questions are, how often should I be four-betting queen-queen in the cutoff versus the big blind? I often flat in this situation, but decided to four-bet to narrow his range when we are so deep stacked. And if I do four bet, is this the right sizing? And should I have taken a stab at this pot, or was it the right play to shut down post flop? My logic was that when he calls a four bet, he could potentially be trapping with aces, but he rarely has queen queen and mainly has ace ace jack jack, ace king suited, ace queen suited, and tens. I only beat tens in that combo. I probably have very little to no fold equity against the others.
So I think it's, at least from my point of view on the novice side, I think it's a good fold, because if he came in that hot, there's a very good likelihood that he at least had an ace, whether it was ace king or ace queen suited, or he happened to draw pocket aces and now he's got trips. And either way, any of those three scenarios, which are all three very likely, we right. lose, and then we're done. So, at least from my point of view, and then I'll let you give yours, I think it was a good fold at that point. I hate taking a loss, but, you know, that's my thought process.
Yeah, I think I want to start with the beginning of the hand, because what did he ask? Is that a good place to four bet there? And I feel like, for at least in my mind, at 100 big blinds, I'm going to push it with a four bet. But the deeper I am, the less likely probably I am to four bet there, which might be backwards from a lot of thinking. But I just feel like, you know, 100 big blinds deep, if I'm four betting, I can get a fold.
Yeah.
300 big blinds deep, say, or more, then if I'm four betting, I don't know that I'm getting that much more information, because they're going to call because they're so deep.
Yeah.
Unless I make it just an outrageous amount. If I shove, maybe I get what I'm looking for there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I that deep, I prefer a call over a four bet. And then if you four bet and they jam, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's a good point. Then you're really up it.
Yeah. I mean, then you have to fold, I think. And as it is, four betting, you're building a big pot versus a good player, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Which isn't ideal. So that's something to be considered there as well. If you do, then you have to have a plan of what you're going to do if he jams on you at that point.
Yeah.
I think the sizing, I would want to do somewhere in the 2.5 to 3.5 range.
Okay.
So I think the sizing, he did three.
Yeah.
So that's probably okay. But I'm like you at the end. I think taking a stab at that at the end is a terrible idea. So yeah, four bet calling range has a ton of ace king, ace queen, maybe ace jack, and definitely could have jack jack there.
Yeah.
You know, if he has pocket jacks, I probably, if it were me and I had pocket jacks there, I'm checking the flop. I probably wouldn't have checked the turn, though.
You throw down a little bit there.
Yeah, trying to get a call Obviously, you have something because you put in a 4-bet pre-flop. Yeah. So probably would have put in something on the turn, hoping that maybe you've got kings.
Yeah, and that would be, I guess, looking back on it now, obviously you can play, you know, Monday morning quarterback with every hand, but I think the only thing that I would have done differently, and you might have learned a little something, is if, so he checks to you after the turn. Yeah, maybe you do. You know, you get the two that pops up that doesn't help anyone. You know, maybe you do put a little bet in, you know, even if it's just, you know, one or two, you know, worthwhile. And then, you know, if you get a quick call there, then yeah, you know what? He probably is on, you know, ace jack, ace king, ace queen, something like that. And then you're kind of done, but at least you learned something there.
Right.
And if, you know, he was on something, you know, completely different, then maybe who knows, but at least you may have cost yourself a few more chips, but you could have learned something. It's the only thing that I would have maybe done differently, to be honest.
Yeah, the more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm looking at this, thinking it does feel kind of like pocket jacks. Yeah. And he checked the flop, he checked the turn, hoping to get you to bet, and then he's trying to make up for the value that he missed.
Yeah.
On the river, and that's why he jams. Because it is kind of an odd jam on the end.
Yeah.
It's check, check, jam. That's kind of weird. But after a 4-bet pot.
Yeah, after that start.
So, yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, the more it does feel like pocket jacks to me. So it's probably a really good fold. And you live to tell the tale.
Yeah, live to fight another day. Go back at him next hand.
I mean, that's a tragic flop for queens.
That is. It really is. You know what? I will say, though, like you said, Merton, that was a good fold. And I'm going to count this in the – it was a wash because I didn't push and lose. So I'm not taking a loss or a win. This is just a wash.
I feel like this is more of a win for you, actually, than last week. So I'm going to count it as a win.
Okay. a good fold after that. Yeah. And, you know, you hate that you had to fold queens, but you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Merton. Well, thanks for sending that in. And if you have a hand that you would like to hear us go through, send it to podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And Patrick, we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. You guys have a good one.
The question is, how you running?
Brian Bly is our ambassador for the Ohio Western Pennsylvania area. He's joining us again this week. Brian, when we talked last time, you were still trying to get some traction going for the year. So how you running now?
Well, I'm hoping that I've reached the bottom and I'm starting to find my way back up. And I'll say this, you know, there's a lot of poker players who maybe haven't been playing for years and years, and you start out the year not so well, and it's easy to get frustrated and disappointed. You know, the date on the calendar doesn't really mean much. I mean, these streaks, they only exist. These are artificial divisions of time. Don't get too down if it's March and you're still negative. I got to a point over the weekend, I was playing in a game and I had lost for 2 weeks coming in. And I said, wow, I'm starting to get so deep here that I'm approaching, my negative number is approaching my positive number for all of 2022. I was starting to get a little bit nervous. Literally, I got into a hand where I think I had one out and I was all in, and I somehow hit my one out or my miracle, and I finished as a slight loser instead of a big loser. It's one of those losses that feels like a win. It's sort of the opposite of when you're up 1,000, but you finish plus 200 and you're driving home kind of cursing your luck, you know?
Is PLO still the game that you're playing most of?
Yes, PLO, the high-low version also, little bit of Hold'em, little bit of Crazy Pineapple.
Oh, fun.
But a lot of those I'm really folding. You know, if I'm playing a mixed game, I'm going to do a lot of folding in Hold'em. I'm going to do a lot of folding in Crazy Pineapple because I feel like I don't have an edge there necessarily. And the edge is in PLO.
There you go.
And especially PLO 8, which just isn't that common. It's you can't find it at casinos a lot.
Interesting, because that's one of my favorites, but I don't see a lot of pineapple usually in a casino either. So,
well, you know, this one's actually not at the casino. This is more of a club or a almost home game situation.
There you go. Okay. Well, before we get too far into the poker, then I got to ask you, baseball season's getting ready to start. So have you pulled out your Astros stuff yet?
I sure did. You know, it's pretty much a year round thing for me. I'm looking forward to, you know, hopefully a seventh consecutive ALCS.
Yeah.
And maybe another pennant, another World Series.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, with Altuve just getting hurt in the baseball classic, then it might be a little slow start.
It's a setback, but we've got the young guy, Pena, the rookie of the year, I think, and the World Series MVP. You know, he was scheduled to hit sixth or seventh because our team is so loaded, which is crazy to think about because, you know, we went through some real lean years in 2011 through 2014. It was, I mean, I wore my stuff out and I just got ridiculed all the time. But it's worth it when it pays off, if it pays off. And we got so many talented players, such a loaded roster, and now we can move the young guy probably into the leadoff spot, and we get Michael Brantley back healthy, hopefully hitting second. And you know, I'd rather have Altuve go down in March than go down in September. We'll put it that way.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. All right, enough of that. We'll get into the poker now. So, what's the scene looking like out there?
Okay, lots of poker festivals in Ohio going on. We have one that wrapped up in Cleveland. We've got something going on right now in Cincinnati. And then there's a big tournament festival in Columbus coming up in a few weeks here in April. We'll start with the MSPT tour stop, which was February 15th through 19th. So I think that was President's Day weekend.
Yep.
And last time we talked, that was just underway. I've got some results here. The previous MSPT event back in May of 2022 drew 991 entrants, and I had predicted that we would get more than 1,000. And in fact, this one ended up with 1,041 players, or 1,041 entries, I should say. And this was a $1,100 buy-in with a $500,000 guarantee. The prize pool ended up at $1,008,270. It's actually the first ever $1 million prize pool in Ohio casino history. So that was a little bit that's noteworthy.
Yeah, that's exciting. Poker is still growing. I love it.
For sure. And some of it might just be might be inflation too.
Fair enough.
First place in the main event was won by Anthony. I'm not sure how to pronounce last name. C-I-C-O. Might be Chico. Might be Cico. Not sure. Good job, Anthony, from Amherst, Ohio. Came in first place. Second place was Brent Ballantyne from Riverview, Michigan, who got 106,890. So still a six-figure score for coming in second. Good work from Brent.
That's nice.
There were three other events with the MSPT event. A seniors 50-plus PLO, and then a $400 no-limit event. All of those ended in chops, Joe. And so I'm not going to give any of the names for those because they're not winners. Choppers are not winners. You know, they don't get their names read on the podcast.
I like that. That is true. They did not win. They chopped. All right.
In other news, at Jack Casino Cleveland, the last time we spoke, I was singing the praises of the poker room manager, Chris Lose. He had instituted a lot of changes, particularly in the cash games, that I was really happy with. Well, I might have jinxed him a little bit. Chris is out. He's been replaced by Mandy Felice, who I've met, who seems very solid. She's a table games shift manager. It's not clear to me if she's taking that position on an interim basis or if she plans to be in that role long term. But Mandy has already instituted a number of changes to the cash games. I haven't played in this new environment yet. I'm not super enthusiastic about what I'm seeing here.
Okay.
So, for instance, one of the things that Chris had done was he made the PLO game more accessible. I tried to play PLO years ago, and if you wanted to see a flop, it was $300-$400.
Right. We talked about that a little bit. And
yeah.
So, he implemented the rock, right?
That's right. So we had a 1-2 game with a rock and a 5-5 game with a rock. The rock made the 1-2 game. The rock was up to 5, sort of a fourth straddle. And the 5-5 game, the rock brings it up to 10. So the new policy is there is no 1-2 game. There's a 5-5 only. And the rules have changed on straddles, too. Jack Cleveland Casino did the thing where I've seen in Cincinnati and a lot of other places where you can straddle from anywhere. You've got the straddle on the button, the straddle in the middle. I was never a fan of that.
Right.
So one of the positive changes is that it looks like in every hold'em game that's 2-5 and above, the only straddle you can do is a single straddle under the gun. And then in the 5-5 Omaha game, again, single straddle under the gun. So at least we're not straddling from what I think of as weird positions. But I can tell you, I'm guessing it might as well be mandatory. If you play in these games, the person under the gun is always going to straddle. And if you don't straddle, the other players at the table are saying, come on, what are you doing? You know, it's your turn to straddle. So for better or worse, I think the hold'em game is now a 2-5-10 game. And the Omaha game will be a 5-5-10 game. And if you want to dip your toes in Omaha, I'm going to say you probably need to bring $2,000, $3,000 to get a taste of Omaha.
Okay.
Because if you're not buying in for $1,000 is almost 100 BBs, right? So, yeah. So what's the point? And you want to bring at least one reload. It's Omaha after all. I mean, you can go broke on the first hand in any big bet game.
Yeah.
So that's the news out of Cleveland. Overall, a very successful event for MSPT. So nice job by those guys.
Yeah, curious to that. So what else is going on around the area then?
Okay, so down in Cincinnati, at Hard Rock Cincinnati, right now as we record, they're doing a festival called the Cincinnati Poker Open. The main event for this is going to be much like what we saw in Cleveland last month, $1,100 buy-in. With a $500,000 guarantee. Some of the results are already in. Hard Rock Cincinnati, of course, has kind of a rock and roll theme. So they have all these winners posing with the trophy and the chips, and they've all got a guitar strapped around their neck. It makes for a cool picture. And it's kind of fun because you see, oh, this guy is an actual guitar player. He's actually doing a chord shape, you know.
Right.
Okay, so the results that are in so far. We have the seniors event was won by Dan Statman. We have a 6-max no limit hold'em event won by Jeffrey Daniels. We have a no limit turbo event won by Stephen Doherty. And PLO 6-max was won by somebody named Kenneth. Didn't give his last name. Probably a wise idea. That way he's not getting hit up by all his friends for that big prize money. But the most interesting one to me as I look at the early results. In terms of, there's an event called the Mystery Bounty. Have you heard of a Mystery Bounty?
Yeah, this has been pretty popular lately. I love it.
Okay, I might butcher this last name. This is a player named Angela DiCipoli. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the name. Angela is listed as coming in first. She won $64,445. Of that is $62,445 as sort of the top prize, plus another $2,000. In bounties. However, the second place, he's listed as second place. He presumably lost the last hand of the tournament. Derek Nold, $66,445, made more money than first place. You know, at first I looked at that. I said, wait, can that be right? Is this some sort of weird deal? I'm going to take more money, but you get the trophy. But no, I think what happened is Derek just happened to have better luck with the mystery bounties.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So it sounds like it's running real well. The players seem to be having a good time with that. Congratulations to poker manager Chris Herbert. They do a real solid job down there in Cincinnati.
Good deal.
And then finally in Columbus, we have coming up beginning April 10th, we have the Hollywood Poker Open. It looks like 12 events. The main event is going to be a $550 buy-in and a guaranteed prize pool of $300,000.
Okay. And when does that one start?
That's April 10th through the 23rd. You know, there's some events leading up. There's some satellites starting up as early as April 11th. And three different day one flights, April 13, 14, 15. And then day two will be the 16th.
All right. That sounds good. Is there any good cash game promotions going on right now?
Not much. A lot of the rooms have these March Madness type deals where somehow, you know, you win a big pot and you reach in and you pull out Fairleigh Dickinson or you know, Gonzaga or something.
Right.
Nothing else really noteworthy, just kind of the standard high hands, bad beats, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, Brian, we'll touch base again in a few weeks and see how things are going.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe.
Yep. Thank you.
It's time for Joe's One-Outer.
The mental and emotional side of poker is often overlooked. There's no doubt that poker is a very challenging game. One of the main reasons poker is so complicated is that we're emotional. We're not robots. Sometimes we make decisions based on emotion as opposed to logic. Downswings happen, tilt happens, we dwell on hands that have already passed, and if these things are going to happen, you better make sure you're prepared. And the only way to be prepared is to work on your mental game. That's why I thought it was important to have Javon Wooden on earlier. Simply put, if you're not working on your mental game, you're leaving tons of money on the table. The majority of players concentrate on improving their technical skills, but without working on their mental game, they are ineffectively or intermittently applying the learned skills to the game. Working on your mental game is almost as important as working on your technical game. I say almost because you can still only be as good as your technical skills allow. However, being mentally prepared lets you use your technical skills to the fullest. The first way to tackle a problem is to identify it. Mental game issues arise in all shapes and forms, so you have to know what you're up against before you can start to address it. Believe me, poker doesn't care what baggage you're bringing in from the rest of your life. It only rewards good decision-making over an extended period of time. Staying ahead of your opponents in poker is hard enough. It requires hard work and perseverance. But none of it matters without mental discipline. Working on your mental game is not as glamorous as figuring out spots to triple barrel bluff, but if you work on that part of your game, it may be the advantage that you need. So, the next time you find yourself thinking about a previous hand or previous session, or you start to feel a little tilted, take 10 seconds. Sit back. Take a few deep breaths. Trust me, your bankroll will thank you for it. That's today's One Outer, and that's our show. See you next week, A-Team. And until then, I'll see you at the tables.
The Annie Up Podcast is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcasts@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call the show at 540-339-7741. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to editor@AnnieUpMagazine.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.